welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast. This is episode 269, and we have a special guest this week, Brian Boyle. He's a speaker, author, and athlete. He's been an endurance athlete since 2007, but 14 years ago, he was learning how to walk again after being released from the ICU after being in a coma and on life support for 2 months. Brian's incredible story has been featured on Ellen, The Today Show, ESPN, CNN, and several other programs throughout the country that have earned Emmy nominations and awards. His story is about transforming a tragedy into a triumph, but it's also about the universal ability that we all have to set goals and accomplish them. When a challenge is presented to us, we do our best to overcome whatever the situation is, and as a result, we learn something about ourselves through the process that makes us stronger. Today, Brian speaks with Wendy and talks about his personal and emotional story of his fight back from near death after a horrific automobile accident. He lost 60% of his blood, his heart had moved across his chest, and his organs and pelvis were pulverized. Brian had to be brought back to life 8 times on the operating table. This story does have a happy ending. He's been a triathlete now for 10 years racing in the sport. He has several tries planned this year, including Ironman Maryland. It'll be his 6th in September. He, in fact, was on the Timex Multisport team, which they will talk about. And he and his wife are excited to announce that they recently published their first children's book called Swim, Bark, Run about triathlon, which was officially released on June 5th. As a parent of a 10-month-old, his goal is that this book will inspire young children to want to live a healthy and active lifestyle by pursuing triathlon as they get a little bit older. We'd love to hear your feedback about this interview after it's over. You can leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/endurancehour or send us an email at endurancehour@gmail.com. And now here's Wendy's interview with Brian Boyle.
Hey, Brian. Thank you for contacting us to do this interview on the Endurance Hour podcast. I really appreciate it. We're always looking for people to share their stories, inspirational stories such as yours. And so I'm really glad we're back in touch because we originally met in 2011, I believe, on Team Timex.
That's correct. And Wendy, thank you so much for the invitation to be on the show today. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it was such a great experience being on Team Timex back in 2011. So many great people, so many phenomenal athletes on that team, and just such a great experience for me in my endurance career.
Yeah, I joined in 2009. I think I applied in 2009. I think I was officially on the team in 2010. And then I decided this year I didn't want to be back on the team. I have other things that I'd like to pursue and my own. I'd like to promote T2 coaching myself, not Team Timex per se. So I'm no longer on the team either. So it was a great experience and definitely lifelong friends that I've made. So it's just great again to get in touch with you. So before we actually tell the story of your incident, and we're going to include a video of your story in the show notes, I'd like to talk about your upbringing because you were an age group swimmer such as myself. So when did you start swimming?
I began swimming at a young age. It wasn't really until my first competitive year was probably 1997, a summer club team. I was about 10, 11 years old in that time frame. And I pretty much grew up around the pool. My parents they dipped my feet into the Atlantic Ocean when I was about 6 weeks old. So I grew up around the water. I loved being around the ocean, the beach, the pool. So it was always kind of destined for me to be in kind of the pool swimming environment. And 1997 was my first year. I took a break from about that time frame to about my sophomore year of high school when I really started to get focused on swimming competitively. And especially when it came to the 50 free, 100 fly, the relays, and hoped for the college career as well. But sophomore year of high school is when it really began for me.
And did you know in high school that you wanted to swim in college?
It was a hope. It was definitely a goal of mine. It wasn't quite a reality at first because the break that I had from 1997 to my sophomore year of high school, it was going pretty much from 5th grade to 10th grade. It's about a 5-year time span. When I swam sophomore year on the summer club team for the first time, I was swimming pretty much back with the 11-year-olds because I needed that much more preparation and training, and I had to really catch up on the years that I lost from not swimming competitively. So when I first began swimming in my sophomore year, I had to put extra time in for training, for racing. After my workouts, I would go back into the pool, do off-season dry land, whatever I could do to get better quicker. But as the years went on, junior year of high school, senior year of high school, college focus was definitely there at that point in time.
That's fantastic. Because I started summer league. I remember I was swimming summer league when I was four. I know I was still taking swim lessons when I was four. And I think my parents just threw me in summer league because my older sisters were doing it. And then I was competing at age six. And when I hit my sophomore year in high school, my high school coach forced me out of the water because I was just kind of in this slump. I wasn't improving, call it overtraining. Back then, we didn't really know what overtraining was, but I'm sure I was overtraining. And it was hard for me. When he told me to take a break, I didn't take a break. I joined the track team. And I appreciate him having me take a break because it just kind of drove my hunger to still want to get back in the pool. And it gave me some running experience. So when I started the sport of triathlon in college, I had some running background. At least I had some ideas of how to run, how to train in running. And it actually helped me with my triathlon career. So let's go back to you. So you're in your sophomore year, and I believe the accident happened in 2004, your senior year. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I had just graduated from high school. Life was looking pretty good at that point in time. I had all these goals for the future, and it was a month after high school graduation when I was coming home from swim practice, preparing for my upcoming freshman year in college on the swim team and so forth, and crossed a local intersection about 5 minutes from my house, and I was struck on my driver's side door by a speeding truck, and the injuries were catastrophic.
Yeah, definitely. Again, like I said, we're going to include that video. And this day and age, I think there's, you know, either you hear about it more, but I definitely think there's more car bike incidents, and one so catastrophic like yourself, it's really amazing that you survived. Tell us a little bit about more.
Yeah, just from that point in time, from the initial impact of the crash, the injuries that I sustained, my heart went across my chest. I pretty much lacerated, or my internal organs failed. I had a severe concussion, broken left clavicle, severe nerve damage to my left shoulder, shattered ribs, shattered pelvis, collapsed lungs. I lost about 60% of my blood at the accident scene to shock trauma. And I was also trapped in my car at the accident scene. So the EMTs and the paramedics and the volunteer firefighters actually received the awards for the way they had to extricate me from the wreckage that day. So in my golden hour, when I was life flighted out, I got to the hospital pretty much dead on arrival and underwent immediate surgery.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Do you remember anything about the truck, or remember seeing the truck or anything like that?
That's a great question. And I think about it every single day. And from the severe concussion that I sustained, there is no memory of July 6th for me. I think about it constantly. Like, I can think about like 2 days prior to July 6th, like July 4th weekend of 2004. The memory's fine. Everything's good. Everything's good before that. But July 6th specifically, it just doesn't register. So nothing that happened that day, I can remember.
When you look at pictures, can you believe it?
It's so surreal, because it feels like I know it happened, but I see the pictures and it almost feels like a dreamlike nightmare kind of situation, because it happened, but I just can't recall that actually happening. It's such a bizarre experience.
Right. So, and again, I'm sure you don't know this, but I'm trying to have this visual of you losing 60% of their blood on the scene. So it was just like all from the internal organs being destroyed.
Yes, it was mainly internal. All like the just everything being pushed around, the impact of the crash, everything kind of being moved out of its original position, especially the internal organs. A lot of it was the internal damage from which caused the internal bleeding. So when I got to the shock trauma, those initial surgeries on the heart, the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, that's kind of when we saw how much blood I lost and how much blood I would receive over the next couple of weeks.
Right. So when you were taken out or got to surgery, was your heart still beating? You said it moved across your chest. Was it beating?
It was.
Or were you literally dead?
It was definitely a situation where when I landed to the shock trauma center, it was pretty much dead on arrival. So the heart had gone through so much trauma, being knocked across the chest, being dislodged, everything in the wrong place, the impact of the crash, the force of that. So I I believe the first couple operations, I had 14 total. They said there was about 8 times where I actually coded on the operating table. So it could have been the first couple of days. It could have been the first couple of weeks, but it was definitely the trauma that I sustained caused the heart to stop during those surgeries.
And, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of movies and that you watch where people flatline, like, and you were just, you don't remember any of that. Like, you don't remember being dead. You know, what is that feeling like to be dead? That was actually one of my first questions when I first met you, was I wonder what it feels like to be dead, because you were dead 8 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe a very silly question, but just something I wanted to ask.
Yeah, it's a great question too, because in that situation, being in a coma and being so close to clinging to life and then coming back to life and so forth, time just kind of stopped in that point in time. So it was like waking up into a living nightmare. I couldn't tell it was day or night, how long I was there, how old I was. It was a very just eerie experience to wake up to. And I had to kind of piece together what happened to me based on the feedback from my healthcare team and my family over the next couple of days. And over the 2 month time span I was in a coma, I was just constantly trying to be in the moment to listen to what was actually taking place around me. Okay. And that's how I found out quite a bit of the information.
Yeah, that leads into one of my questions. As I was watching that video, I believe you were in a coma, but could you hear something about your father saying something to you that when you woke up, you remembered? He thought you were giving up on life, but you heard him say that or something like that. I can't remember the exact details. Could you hear them? Could you hear what was going on when you were in your coma?
It was during the 2 months that I was in a coma, I was in and out of consciousness. So I would still be in the coma, but I would be almost like weaned off the heavy sedation. And I had to try to show signs of life through communication, but it wasn't always reliable and it wasn't always what I was aware of.
Right.
So in those moments when I was being weaned off the heavy sedation and I was being told, okay, Brian, can you squeeze our hand or our fingers? Can you move your toes? Can you blink for yes or no commands?
Okay.
For the first couple of weeks, there was nothing there. And it wasn't probably until about a little over a month into the 2 month ordeal when I remember just looking at the situation, being in a moment one day when I'm thinking, okay, I've gone through so much already. Now I'm hearing about possible nursing homes the rest of my life.
You were conscious of that was going on?
Yes. I could hear those statements being wheeled down the different hallways, going to get my x-rays and CAT scans and surgeries. I would be able to overhear things when I was conscious, even though I was still medically induced in the coma. And in those situations when I was reflecting and listening and overhearing everything around me, I realized how serious it really was. And that moment in life when I just realized that these obstacles, this negativity, this reality is just overcoming me. And I can't get any better. I'm not getting any, there's no progress being made.
Right.
I'm just getting worse. I'm declining. My health is failing. I'm dying. And in that point in time, it was a little over that the 1 month time frame when my parents, I believe through parental instinct, they knew. Somehow they knew. I couldn't talk to anybody on the surface. I wasn't there. I wasn't showing signs of life. But I believe my parents, they were so observant of me and knowing the little subtle cues that they kind of knew somehow that I was giving up. I had said my final prayers. I threw in the towel. I was done. I wasn't going any further from that point on, and I was giving up. And my dad came in that day, and my mom was next to him at first by the sliding glass door with the two nurses holding her up, and she had tissues up to her face. And my dad walked up to my bed very slowly, and his shoulders were kind of just slumped over. He looked just so defeated and exhausted, and he sat down next to my bed. And he put his hands over my chest that was just covered in a web of wires and tubes and electricity. And he was just begging me to stay strong, to keep fighting, to keep living for myself, for him, for my mom, my family, my future wife and children. And I'm 18 years old in that point in time. And I realized by the fire in his eyes and how serious the situation is that I had to get better. If I don't make it, they're not going to make it. And that's what they're telling me. So it was the parental motivation, the parental instinct. But I believe it was their love that they had for me that really helped pull me from that darkness to get better, to get back into life, and help me realize that I had to get better for them. And it wasn't just me suffering in that room in ICU.
Right. And then, okay, then what happened that second month? From that moment on, what happened?
from that moment, that's when the recovery began. And little miracles were taking place every single day. So that night when they had left for their session of visiting hours that day, they came back in one more time later on in the evening, and I was able to put a smile on my face. And that was that first subtle gesture, that visual cue that I'm still here. I'm still fighting for them. I'm still living. And I just saw the happiness in their faces for the first time in over a month. And I just fed off that energy, that enthusiasm, that excitement, that happiness. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep going. So it went from smiling to blinking to moving my fingers and my toes. Mm-hmm. And then baby steps of learning how to sit upright and learn to speak with the passimure valve for on my trach, and my life support was removed, and I'm able to sit upright and learn how to stand with the physical therapists around me holding me up as I'm sliding my toes across the floor to do my first couple steps. Progress was minimal, but progress was taking place on a daily and weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And I just saw how happy it made my parents and family and my medical team that I just kept feeding into that and just trying to do whatever I could to get better quicker.
Yeah, and any progress is progress, no matter how big or how small. Progress is progress, and that's definitely positive. I kind of say that a lot to athletes I coach. Don't ever discount any progress you made, because that's a stepping stone to continue to make progress. So that sounds awesome. So now you're kind of getting out of the hospital. It was a couple months later. You're learning how to walk. Were you paralyzed?
I was paralyzed from the medically induced coma, but there was no spinal or brain damage. It was pretty much all internal. So the heart, especially liver, kidneys, lungs, some of the bones were broken, but there was no spinal damage, thankfully.
Okay. So then how long did it take for you to kind of be normal, be able to walk again, eat again, activities of daily living?
It took time. It took some time. So when I was transferred out of ICU, I went to rehab in Baltimore. This was probably around September when I was able to get home. Mm-hmm. And I began doing intense physical therapy and outpatient rehab for several months. And from that point in time, it was just about getting back in life again. So I would say from July, which was the accident, to about December is when I was really able to start getting back into life, walking, eating normal foods, having the endurance to move around and to do regular things like tie my shoes and brush my hair and brush my teeth. Mm-hmm. I would say about December of 2004 is when things started to slowly get back into the regular routine.
Mm-hmm. And then at that point, did you start to have like new goals? Like what were your goals before the accident?
I would say prior to the accident, when I just graduated from high school, it was to go to college, do the swim team. And I always had such an interest in the Ironman triathlon at a young age. Ever since I saw the show the first time on TV, I must have been, I don't know, just a couple years old. Uh-huh. And I just always had such a fascination with that sport. And those are my three goals, I would say. High school, it was to go to college, swim team, and do an Ironman.
And do an Ironman. To do an Ironman or to do a triathlon? You just wanted to just go big.
Yeah, Ironman was because that was what I grew up watching, and I just loved the world class venue, the amazing athletes, the just everything about that race, the energy of Kona, the legacy of that race. I just knew that one day I was hopeful to do the Ironman. But growing up, I didn't realize that there were more Ironmans besides Hawaii. I just wanted to do an Ironman. That was the goal.
That's really cool because. We are definitely, I've said this before on the podcast, we're in an Ironman craze society. Everyone wants to do an Ironman. And, you know, back when I started, 1997 was my first Ironman, and there were only like five, you know. But a lot of people think when they hear the word triathlon, sometimes they just assume Ironman. And a lot of athletes who start triathlon, they start triathlon because they want to do an Ironman. Usually they want to do Kona, but a lot of people are happy with just doing an Ironman. And I always talk about having a strong why. So that's why I asked what your why and your reason was for doing an Ironman. So you have the accident, you're doing rehab, you're starting to like live a normal life. When did you start? And again, we're forecasting you did you ended up doing the Ironman in 2007, correct?
That's correct. In October, I believe it was October 13th, 2007.
And that's only 3 years after the accident. So what was that like? Like, like you're, you know, obviously you had a life-changing event. You died 8 times on the operating table. You had this traumatic experience. All of a sudden you're living life. When did you start pursuing the Ironman again? And what was training like leading up to your first Ironman?
It really, when I look back on it, 3 years, that is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
I would say going back to like December of that year, when I was starting to really get back into life and have the regular routine, that was my first time back in the pool as well. And that's kind of what influenced me to think about, okay, maybe my goals, maybe they're still kind of lingering there. And mm-hmm. once I got back in the pool, it was just about doggy paddling, just being back in the indoor pool environment. Mm-hmm. But me being a very competitive person growing up in athletics, I was thinking to myself, okay, I don't want to just get back in the pool. This was after the first couple of times going back to the pool after the recovery. But I want to go back and actually swim and then start to build up the endurance and the stamina. So it was a year after leaving ICU. So it was about September of 2005 when I was able to go to my freshman year of college and join the swim team, not compete anywhere where I was when I was in high school. I just happened to be on the team. Uh-huh. And it was about 2 years after that where the Ironman journey began. And that was just steady progress. The goals were there. And it was just, it wasn't about leaving the hospital and doing an Ironman. It was about leaving the hospital and just living and then just surviving and just getting better, doing my physical therapy, getting back into life. Then it was about learning how to stand and then to walk and then to swim and then to run and then to bike. So it was just all different phases of the recovery process. And those phases and the progress that came from that, it just motivated me further to think, okay, what is the next challenge? What is the next obstacle? Uh-huh. And I just kept pushing the envelope every single day, not out of ego, but out of just pure amazement at the journey I had been on with my family, my friends, and everyone who had been supporting me. I just kept thinking, okay, if I can just get better and improve, I'm just seeing how it's affecting everyone around me. And they're just so joyful and happy. And I'm happy about this too. But it was just a combination of factors that really evolved into me pursuing not just going to college and swimming, but okay, that third goal is still there. It is the Ironman. Let's see what we can do. Let's hope for the best and give it a try.
So basically you just trained. You didn't really follow a training plan. Did you just train and say, okay, I'm ready. Let's do this.
It felt like that early on because I had about 6 weeks total preparation for the Kona Ironman in 2007. Cause I just finished up my junior year in college. I just became a personal trainer that May. I got certified.
Cool.
And I had emailed the Ironman headquarters asking, I shared my story and I was asking them, what is the process to register for an Ironman in the future? I'm thinking 5-10 years. Uh-huh. And not the Hawaii Ironman, but an Ironman locally to me where I live in Maryland, maybe like Lake Placid or Ironman Louisville. Uh-huh. And that's when I sent the email, and about a month later is when I heard from Peter Henning from the Ironman at the time, and he showed interest in the story, and we kind of began that whole process of making this dream a reality. And it came from a few weeks later going into Steelhead Half Ironman in Michigan, doing that for my first triathlon, and then going into October for the Hawaii Ironman that same year.
So basically it's you sent in your story. They loved it. They said, we want you here now this year.
Yes. But I was looking at 5-10 years.
Right. And right.
When I heard from Peter, it was, what about this year? And for me in that point in time, I was so amazed to have that response. I was so excited about it, but I was also going through so much medically at the time as well. And when I left the hospital, I had so many just very, very, very big injuries. So when I left the hospital, it was just all about just staying the course, getting better, recovering.
Right.
And when I had that invitation from the Ironman to possibly attempt doing the Hawaii Ironman that same year in 2007, I didn't know if I had another year that I could wait. So I had to give it my all in that point in time because there was no year away from that point in time. There was no 5-year plan really. It was just about thinking, I have to, if I had this opportunity, if I had this invitation, I had to pursue this right now because there may not be a future because of my medical background.
That's excellent. Because you just jumped right into it. Now, did you had never run, you at least did a half Ironman before Kona. You never run. What was your longest run before Kona?
It was, it was from Steelhead. It was the half marathon.
And then what was your longest ride? Steelhead?
Yep, it was about that same time frame. So yeah. That was like my first stepping stone. I remember crossing the finish line and Peter was there. And he said, Brian, do you think you can do this twice? And that was August of 2007. And Hawaii Ironman was in October. So there really was not much training.
No.
So it was a very mental journey. That mindset was everything.
Because what I was just going to say. It just goes to prove how important mindset and attitude is.
Yes, yes. That was obviously the biggest contributing factor was having that mindset, having that support. And I had the background in swimming. I didn't have the background in running long distance or biking, but I just relied on that swimming background to get me through the swim. And whatever I had to do to finish that bike, I would just do what I could and just hopefully get to the run phase of the Ironman. And if I had to crawl to get to the finish line, I would have crawled because I was going to do all that I possibly could to get to the finish line. But even in that situation, the reality of that with my medical background and my limited training, not many people thought I could finish, and really including myself. I was just like, I'm hopeful. I'm gonna do the best I can. Uh-huh. Let's go from each phase of the race to the next. If I get there, I'm gonna keep going. But if I stop, then that's what it is. But it was a really wait and see kind of scenario.
Having a swimming background helps a lot because you had confidence that you could swim. Now, were you scared? Like, were you like, did you go into the race like who cares, whatever happens, happens, I'm here? Or were you scared?
I was definitely nervous. Uh-huh. It was such a different, everything about it was just, I can't believe I'm here. I just kept thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm here with all these world-class athletes, mm-hmm. living a dream. This is such an amazing opportunity. And I'm just so thankful and grateful to be here. So I just kept thinking to myself, okay, this is a big deal. Let's just have a good day. And my mom, my dad, they were so nervous. My family, my medical team, they were very nervous as well. Uh-huh. But we're positive. We're very hopeful and optimistic. And I just kept reflecting back on the journey, the coma, the recovery, physical therapy. And that's really what helped me in those dark moments of my first Ironman was to just get to each phase of the race. And then just the finish strong with before midnight. And luckily, it all worked out that day.
What were your, let's jump to race day. What was your swim, bike, and run split? Do you remember?
I think the swim was about an hour and 11 minutes or so.
Okay.
And the bike was about 7:30, around 7:30 for the bike.
That's not bad for Kona heat. When I was there that year, Kona heat, Kona winds, your first 112 mile bike, your first ride over 56 miles. That's pretty good. And then the marathon?
The marathon was about 5 hours and about 40 minutes.
So what was your total time? That's outstanding for a marathon.
Thank you. I was hurting. I'm not going to lie. It was definitely painful, but I think it was about 14 hours and 42 minutes for Kona that year.
That's great. I mean, that's great. Consider again, it's great for anyone, but with everything you've been through, that's just phenomenal that you were able to pull that off. How old are you? 21?
21, 22?
Mm-hmm. That makes a little bit of a difference. Okay. So let's even move on forward. So you do your first Ironman, you finish. What happens next?
Then I recovered for about a month and just reflected back on how amazing the experience was. And I just kept thinking to myself, I finished my first Ironman. And just to have that, it really was given, it's like being given the breath of life all over again, because uh-huh. I felt if with any kind of ailments or if I coughed or if I had if I sneezed or I had a sore throat, I'm going back to the emergency room. My medical background was so severe, but
right.
crossing that finish line in Hawaii close to midnight in 2007, that was like being reborn in so many ways because it helped me know that I'm okay. Mom and dad, you don't have to worry anymore. I'm going to be okay. And it really gave me a confidence boost. And I kept thinking to myself, I love this sport. I love everything about this. Now I want to have more preparation and more training. I want to keep going. I want uh-huh. to see what the next phase is going to be. And I was able to continue on. And that's what I've been doing for the past 11 years uh-huh. is just enjoying the journey, enjoying the sport, and continuing on and just putting more time in for training, which helps a lot.
That's great. I was telling someone the other day, my first Ironman was 1997. And that doing that Ironman in 1997 really paved my path of life because of that Ironman. It kind of, it helped me learn about triathlon. It helped me become a coach. swim instructor. I mean, everything about finishing that Ironman just kind of pointed me in a new direction for life. So that's fantastic. Did you finish your college degree?
I did. I graduated back in 2010.
And what did you get your degree in?
It was like graphic design.
Okay. And are you still a personal trainer?
I'm still certified, yes. Okay. And also certified as a USA triathlon coach.
And what's your current career right now?
I work for the American Red Cross at their national headquarters in Washington, D.C., and I work in the marketing field.
Okay. I did read about that. So do you do any coaching?
I would like to. I just became certified recently, so I really would like to get involved when it comes to coaching.
What kind of demographic? Kids, adults?
I would say definitely beginner triathletes, because that's what I really gravitate towards. That's my experience. And yeah, I would say age groupers, probably from teenagers up to adults, I would say.
Well, you have a good, it's a great story to share with people, especially the mental side of training, what you were able to overcome and still pursue. Who can say that? Who can say they've even come close to living the life you have lived? And I think a lot of athletes get so hung up and so held back by their mental side, their confidence and all that. And then hearing your story, you just went out and did it. It's pretty awesome.
It was definitely an experience, and I'm just so thankful for the support that the mindset and also the support that I had. It kept me believing in myself when I had those doubts and those moments of negativity where I'm thinking, I can't do this. What am I thinking to even want to be able to attempt this amazing race? And the support that I had and those moments of doubt, it all kind of came to the surface, especially in my very first Ironman. Mm-hmm. And I love this sport. I love the community of athletes. It's a family. That's the reason why I've been racing ever since, because I'm just so thankful for that support that I received. And I just love racing. I love training. I love the experience. I love everything about this sport. And it's just been an amazing journey over the past decade.
So how many Ironman, half Ironman, marathon type races have you done? You've done some Spartan races. Tell us a little bit about your experience with racing and training.
It's been busy. And I, looking at the races, I would say five full Ironmans.
What's your favorite one?
My Hawaii.
Okay.
That was my first one. It's so hard to recreate that experience.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's my heart and soul for the sport. I love Hawaii. Every race that I do, I love. But that one is my very first one. So that one really, really hits home for me.
Yeah, I agree. What's your second best favorite?
I would say for the full distance, Ironman Maryland. I'm born and raised in Maryland. Uh-huh. I've raced Eagleman 3 years. I've raced Ironman Maryland back in 2014. I'm racing it again this September. So I just love the sport. Growing up in Southern Maryland, it's a very flat area. So Eagleman, Ironman Maryland, the course is very flat, very fast, a little windy. But that's where I train and really enjoy that race venue. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal area.
So is Eagleman your favorite 70.3?
I would say so. I've done it 3 times, and I was able to qualify for the Half Ironman World Championship at that course back in 2011 as well. So that's
awesome. That was in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada?
That was the one, yeah.
Nevada. Have you done any sprints or Olympics distances?
I've done quite a few Olympic distances over the years.
Any favorite one?
Ooh, I would say I love Malibu. Oh, New York City was a lot of fun as well. Uh-huh. Nations. Right here in Washington, D.C. area. That was really, really great. Every race that I do, I love. It's hard to pick the favorite ones, but they all have such a significance to them.
Right. And how many marathons have you done? Non-Ironman marathons.
Non-Ironman marathons, 16, I think, open marathons.
Nice. Is an open marathon harder or easier, depending on how you define hard and easy, than an Ironman marathon?
I think with the Ironman, like, I'm so ready to go after the bike that the marathon just becomes a part of that experience. When it's an open marathon, like, I'm trying to shoot for a certain time, so the focus is on that personal best.
Right.
Not that it always happens, but it's just, it's a hopeful dream every time I do a race. But I would say, a marathon and Ironman, I'm already in that groove. It's already there. And it's just kind of hanging on for dear life at the end. They're both equally difficult. But I would say probably more so in the open just because it's going probably at a faster pace.
Yeah. And I have more Ironman marathon experiences than I do open marathon. But I think the open marathon is hard for those reasons. You're going at a higher intensity and you're going for that PR, and it's just, I don't know. I feel like I've bonked in a marathon, but I don't feel like I've bonked the same way in an Ironman marathon. It's just definitely really different. I like how you said the marathon is just a carrying over from the bike experience. Definitely. I get that feeling. What is your favorite triathlon educational book or blog or podcast?
Oh, there's so many. And modern technology is great because when I go out for my long runs and my swims, I always have a podcast on. So definitely Endurance Hour. I love the podcast you guys do. It's phenomenal.
Thank you.
So many great resources with training, nutrition. I love reading. So I'm always trying to find, certain, especially triathlon or mindset, motivational, inspirational books. I'm currently reading Endure by Alex Hutchinson, which is really great. And my next book I'm going to be reading is, Matt Dixon. His Fast Track Triathlete looks really interesting as well. So big fan of that. Bob Babbitt, Babbittville Radio, huge fan of. Endurance Junkie for the podcast.
Yeah, I've read and listened to all those too.
Yeah. and anything on Slow Twitch, all the triathlete magazines, Triathlon 220. I mean, whatever's out there, I'm always just trying to find ways to just get better and improve, especially when it comes to my running, because the swimming is okay. The biking has improved a lot over the years, but I'm still trying to work on that marathon because that's been my weakest in Ironman distance, is really trying to improve that run and
good
nutrition.
Good. So let's talk about the books. You've written three.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the three, that starting from the first one to the second one to the third one.
It was a fun process to write my first book, Iron Heart, back in 2009. And that came from just the stack of journals that I had, the composition books going through recovery. My nurse said, "Brian, how's your recovery going? How's your therapy?" And I just had this composition book that I was just putting all my thoughts and, all my goals in these books. And after about 3 years of just writing continuously for just all this time, I saw that I had so much that I had gone through, and I can go back and track that progress. And I thought this could help other people in a very similar adverse situation, other patients, their families as well, to kind of help them navigate that overall process. So that was the motivation to get those journals published, which became Iron Heart in 2009. And that was my very first book. The second one was The Patient Experience, which is very similar to Iron Heart, but it's more the medical emphasis. It's for healthcare providers, it's for families, it's also for patients that are currently in the recovery timeframe. So it's about helping them navigate that system, about giving them suggestions, recommendations, and ways to help heal, to recover, to get to survive and to thrive and to have that support, knowing that they're not alone. They're on this journey with other people who have been through something very similar. And the third book just came out last month on June 5th, and that is my first children's triathlon book called Swim, Bark, Run. And it's a fun, lighthearted story about a dog that I had growing up, Daisy, the English bulldog, and she gets all her dog friends to do a triathlon or a dog athlon. And she's been a pretty much most of my races in the local area over the years. And it's kind of the twist where now she's wanted to do a race, and I kind of show up and be kind of like her motivational support, kind of help guide her to the finish line and everything. So it's for young children between ages of 3 to 5 years old. It's also for parents that are triathletes or interested in the sport, could have a multi-sport background, swimming, biking, running. Just to get the children, the youth especially, to want to pursue the sport, because I love triathlon. I love everything about it. And to get them involved in the sport at a young age, I feel is very important.
That's so cool. I'm excited to read them. That's just fantastic. So let me just, I think you already said this, but so the first book was basically you had all these blogs and you were just logging and blogging your experience that you decided to kind of just put it together in a book to share with people.
That's correct. It came from, it might have been looking back, it was about Thanksgiving of 2004. I had to go back in the hospital for complications, and that's when I met a lot of my healthcare team, and my nurses had suggested to put my thoughts in a composition book. So I came home from the hospital, got better, and just started writing, pouring my heart and soul into these composition books. And after about 3 years, it became a published format. And when I first began writing, it wasn't about, okay, I want to publish a book. It wasn't that kind of focus. It was more like, okay, I'm going to put my thoughts down. I'm going to just try and get better. And I'm going to use these pages, these words, to help motivate me further in my own recovery. But as time went on, as I healed and progressed, these experiences that I had made me realize that the people I'm meeting, the other patients, I'm going through rehab and I'm talking to support groups, I'm talking to other patients and their families, this experience could help them because mm-hmm. I'm getting better and I can relate to them. I can connect with them. And this book could possibly help them as they're progressing as well.
That's fantastic. Explain a little bit about more what you're currently doing with the Red Cross.
So I was a Red Cross volunteer for 10 years, mm-hmm. and I recently joined forces with them on a full-time basis back in 2017 in February. So I work at national headquarters in Washington, D.C. So I work in the marketing field. So we're working with national partnerships, working with sponsors to help support blood drives, to help support incentives for our blood donors, to encourage people to donate blood on a national level. And also to continue to be an ambassador for how that 1 hour of your time can help give someone the chance at a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I was a blood recipient many times over. I received 36 transfusions and 13 plasma treatments. Wow. And every race that I do, continuing to this very day, every race I do, I have 36 tiny red crosses on my race suit to mm-hmm. represent my 36 blood donors. And for me, that's been just dedicating my life to this mission is helping other people, helping other blood recipients, and helping other patients.
That's fantastic. I love it. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Honestly, I just want to say thank you, Wendy, and thank you to your team, to Dave, and to the triathlon community. Like I said, I'm so proud to be a triathlete. I'm so proud to be a part of this sport and to have the support that I received over the years. And when I first did my Ironman, it was about the healing, it was about the recovery, it was about completing that part of my recovery, but also to live that dream. And my goal ever since that very first Ironman has been, as an age grouper, to qualify on my own ability. So that journey is still continuing. So I appreciate all the support that I received over the years. I've been able to qualify for the Half Ironman World Championship, but I'm still trying to get on that full level when it comes to going back to Hawaii on my own abilities, and not just because of the story and so forth, which was amazing a couple of years ago, but now to be, as an age grouper, I want to be able to go back and share that gratitude that I have for the support that I received and to go back to Kona on my own abilities.
Yeah. I hope you make it.
One day
you
soon.
Will. You will. You will. You know what? Triathlon, again, to me and to probably most people, it definitely is a lifestyle. I've been doing it for 27 years. And if you love what you're doing, you're passionate and you enjoy the journey, it's your lifestyle. Whether you qualify this year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll do it if you want to do it. You know, I think when you start, it's a mindset. When you put your mind to wanting to achieve something, don't let anything get in your way. Why stop? You know,
it's so true.
Good luck. How where are you at? Like time wise. Where are you close? Where are you at?
Oh, every race is different, but uh-huh. especially the Ironman level, full Ironman distance. So my first race back in 2007 was about 14:42. So where I'm at now after my fifth Ironman, I'm about 10:13, 10:14 is my personal best. So uh-huh. getting closer every year. I still have a ways to go because the sport is growing so fast and everyone's getting very fast. Mm-hmm. everyone's just doing great. So it's just about just staying steady, progressing, getting better, and just continuing to train and staying hopeful that one day it'll happen.
Yeah, and you're not even peaked. You still got plenty of years to reach your peak. So enjoy it.
That's definitely the goal.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to hear your story. I feel like we're in person. And definitely, if anyone is listening out there has any comments or feedback for Brian, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on Twitter, Brian J. Boyle. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, email. My website is ironheartbrianboyle.com. And I, anyone has any questions about, you know, if you're interested in the sport or any questions at all about the story, please feel free to always contact me. I'm always available.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Wendy. And thank you for all you do for the sport. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
A big thanks to Brian for sharing his story. If you'd like to reach out to Brian, I've included his contact information in the show notes at endurancehour.com/episode269. For Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening this week. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.